Hi, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. I am so excited to talk to just one of the coolest people I've met this year. And in addition to being the coolest, she's also a trailblazer, super smart, and such a thought leader. I hope you're following her on LinkedIn. If you're not, you're probably going to want to pause this podcast halfway through and go and follow her. Her LinkedIn profile is definitely linked in the show notes, but let's get Jessica introduced. I'll kick it over to you, Jessica. Welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to have you joining us, and tell our listeners who you are.
I love this. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the podcast. Meeting you in person this year was so much fun. We happened to sit across each other from dinner, and now we are kindred spirits. I'm just excited to be here. I talk a lot of crap on LinkedIn about the world of HR and how it could be better. And I've been doing HR for 13 years now. And then I have my own career coaching business, Hit and Gym Career Coaching, where I focus on helping people either transition into a new job or up their game at their current job. So one of my clients, I literally am coaching her right now on how to get a promotion and what to say and all those things, because it's so hard for people to speak up. And not everybody has to do what I've done. I've done a whole presentation on why I should get a promotion before, which that's a different story, but I did get that promotion. but I coach people on really what to do. So I'm excited to chat with you today because I think it's so important. The world of work impacts people on every level, and I don't think we give it enough importance.
Absolutely. This is why we're kindred spirits, because I agree. I think the workplace is kind of this special untapped frontier, so to speak, of societal change. Yes. And it is a place where very different people can still get together and be productive and work together. And it is also a place where stuff kind of sucks sometimes. And it's a great opportunity to really make a difference in folks' lives, which brings us to our topic that I'm excited to chat with you about today. And it is one that hits close to home, and it's caregiving. Mm-hmm. As most of us know, caregiving is a hot topic, and it is because so many people you're working with, in your life, are caregivers. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shift from what we've seen in previous generations, where a lot of people were caregivers of their children. Yeah. But now we're seeing a lot of caregivers that are kind of sandwiched, as you mentioned before we started recording, sandwiched between children and parents or other individuals that they're supporting. Mm-hmm. So I would love to kind of kick off, and if, as much as you're open to sharing, kind of share your own story, your experience with kind of being that sandwich caregiver.
Yeah. I feel like I'm the definition of when you see in the news and they're these people that are in between, that's my life right now. And full circle moment is that in my 20s, I was the definition of young, wild, and free. Okay. A little bit too wild and a little bit too free, but I was just living my life. I was traveling. I was doing everything. And then in my 30s, I met the love of my life. I got married. We have twins that are 10 months old. And when I met my husband, one of the first things he told me was that I'm my mom's caregiver. And I truly don't think at the time I understood. I remember being oh, that's so cool. You're a son and you're taking care of your mom. And I did not understand the impact that it would have on, the rest of my life. I truly didn't. And now that we're married, we have two kids, my mother-in-law has dementia. My husband is her only son. So she only has one child. He is her primary caregiver, and he has been for the last 5+ years. So he literally, if you name it, he has to do everything for her. She is 100% dependent on us. And so when we talk about caregiving, I think sometimes people just don't understand the weight of it. For example, before he started his new law firm, he was working at another company, and he had mentioned to them in the interview process that I have to take my mom to doctor's appointments, and she's now in a wheelchair. So we have to get a service, and it's a thing to even get her to a doctor's appointment. And then, because if you ask her a question, most of the time she can't answer. So he has to stay through the doctor's appointment. And I don't think the person he was interviewing understood the level of it. So they were you take her and you drop her off and you go get her, like an Uber type situation. He's no, that is not what it's at all. I have to be with her. And these appointments might take 3-4 hours because she's not able to do certain things. And so I think it really came to be one of the things that he got feedback on is like, oh, you're gone too much. And we didn't realize it was going to be this much. And I felt so bad for him. I really, really did. Like, it made me so sad because he's such a good employee, but he absolutely has to take care of his mother. So there are so many employees out there right now that, and it's not just moms, it's whoever, loved ones. It doesn't matter who the person is. If you are their primary caregiver, you're taking care of them. And there is something different about taking care of small children, which is where I'm at right now, versus someone in elder care that is completely dependent on you. So I say that to say it is, I think of what an honor it is to take care of her. And he and I talk about this all the time. Like, she is the reason that we live in Vegas because this is where she is. So I knew when I met my husband and he's like, hey, I know your family's in Texas, but I will live in Vegas the whole time that my mom is here. And I was like, get it, got it. We're moving to Vegas. So it definitely has impacted my life, but also in the most beautiful way. Like, some of the stories I can tell you about her, and she's the most hilarious person you will ever meet. She calls my daughter's names are Navy and Savannah. She calls them Navy and Air Force. She does.
Oh, I'm my like, gosh.
Calling me, but I still love you, girl.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's such, I mean, there's art, like, so much there to kind of unpack and explore. And the first thing from, you know, two HR executives, former HR executives, an employee who is transparent upfront about what they need and is so dedicated to supporting a person they care about. What amazing qualities in an employee. Even if you don't know anything else.
Yeah.
What amazing qualities. And I think it's so interesting because I'm sure you've felt this many times in your career. There's so many times someone will tell us what they need.
Yes.
Which is hard. It's hard to do that as an employee, whether it's flexibility, whether it's more opportunity, whether it is additional support, whether it is an accommodation. Someone will tell us what they need and we're like, oh yeah. And we don't genuinely don't really listen.
Yes. You don't really hear what it actually is going to take.
Yes. And I mean, how frustrating is it to, you know, put yourself out there, especially in an interview process and feel heard, feel like, oh, okay, this is going to work out. And then get feedback that, oh no, that's actually not what we were expecting.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, like, I have this, like, you know, cross to bear when it comes to saying that, like, you need to treat people like adults. So in these same situations, what my husband would do is the days he would have to take his mother to the hospital or to the doctor or anything, physical therapy, whatever she needed that day, he would literally go to work early. I'm talking 6 a.m. Take her to the doctor, go back and work late. So it wasn't like he was missing time, but obviously doctor's visits most of the time are in the middle of the day. Okay. So he might have to miss a meeting or whatever, but he's making up for it. And I just remember being just so irritated by the whole thing. Like, but you told them it's on the calendar. Like, if this meeting was so important and they needed you there, why didn't they move it? It's been on the calendar for over a month. He doesn't make appointments for her like same day because you can't do that. You know, like, he has to get a car service to even pick her up. So these things are planned out months in advance and it's still a problem. So yeah, it really sucks.
Some of those things that drive me bananas when it comes to the workplace, it is the ass and seat culture. Mm-hmm. The I just want to see you. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you're doing, how good you are at your job. I just want to see you. Mm-hmm. I'm so over that.
Okay, you can just fake type, but your butt better be seen.
Yeah, like you're in here, like you're sitting at your computer, what, watching Netflix, shopping for cowboy boots, who knows? Yep. And like, oh, I just want to see you in the seat. Mm-hmm. That is, to me, one of the greatest signs of lazy leadership.
Yes.
Like, you don't know what this person's supposed to be doing and how to measure those outcomes. How are you a business professional? Because I tell you what, if I ever was an HR professional who couldn't measure my outcomes.
Oh, yeah. We all know where that would go. Yeah.
Let's talk about those double standards. It's so wild. And it is. It's true. It's someone has a plan and then someone else just like, oh, I didn't think about, you know, what this really took or how to really make this work. Mm-hmm. It's just,
yeah,
very frustrating. It's very frustrating.
It's hard. And now he's in a different situation because he started his own business. So now it's completely like, he's like, I make my own schedule, and he loves it, and it's much better. But I will also say perception is another thing, because I do know that there have been times where I've witnessed it for him where people are so, they mean well, but their energy is very like, oh, poor you. And his response is like, what an honor. Do you know what she did for me? And she was a single mom. Like, what an honor it is to take care of her. I will take care of her for the rest of her days. She will be completely fine and loved, and she will be great. But so even that energy, I see very differently. Because even I'm sure I, you know, mistakenly probably did that to people in my past, where I'm like, oh, you have to take care of your kid. And now that I'm in this situation, I'm like, well, yeah, you know, but it's completely, even the mindset of it is different.
I mean, how does it feel caregiving for children, mm-hmm, versus caregiving for an adult? I know you mentioned that it is different. I mean, what's that difference in feeling when it comes to, you know, how folks interact with you or how it kind of plays out in the workplace?
Yeah, you know what I think the biggest difference is expectations. So I think when people hear that I have twins, they're like, oh my God, like, want to see a photo and it's so cute. And like, oh, they're sick or you need time off. That's fine. Now on the flip side, if my husband was to ask for time off, they'd be like, but where's your wife? You know, so that double standard is real. And then on the same time, there's less the expectation. Like, most people don't expect that my husband and I are doing elder care. So when we mention it, it's like people are thrown off because they think like, oh, you're going to be older before that happens. And unfortunately, she did have early onset dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff. So that is different. But I think that it's an expectation that we'll be doing childcare, but it's not an expectation we're doing elder care. So it's not given the same level of respect in kind of like, you know, you can figure it out. It's very much a like, oh, you have to do that. You know, it's mm-hmm, not respected as much.
So thinking about the double standard around, mm-hmm, that, I think people make assumptions about people based on where they are in their life, what's going on, you know, photos of kids on desktops, things like that. And those kind of expectations, they create biases that, mm-hmm, show up. And I have a new on one about, mm-hmm, invisible diversity and, yep, how good we are at ignoring it. Mm-hmm. And how frequently it comes up in the workplace, mm-hmm, when we talk about invisible disabilities. My dad is a disabled veteran, and, mm-hmm, he has been a disabled veteran his entire adult life. Mm-hmm. He even picked me up when I was a baby because he was so injured. And if you know him, you would not know that. Mm-hmm. It's invisible. It's unseen. Yeah. And then you think about traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. Most people are not sharing their traumatic experiences in the workplace. I get it. I would not personally share my traumatic experience with my coworkers. Invisible. And then you think about too, all of the, and like when we look at statistics around caregiving, around caregiving for not your children, mm-hmm, it's a huge portion of our workforce right now. Yeah. And it's not visible. I think about it. I cannot recall in my career as an HR professional, someone coming to me to talk about navigating elder care. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would have frequent conversations about navigating healthcare, childcare,
like parental leave.
Yes, absolutely. It's so, you know, you mentioning that to me, I'm like, I think that this is another one of those. It's an element of diversity, an element of a unique life experience. And we're not really seeing it, but it's impacting so much of our society, of our workplace.
Yeah. And it's going to only increase. So I think the most recent number I saw was like 70% of the workforce has some form of caregiving responsibilities, no matter who that is. And if you think about like generations and all of that, it's only going to increase. Yeah. My husband and I have had this conversation about my parents. So like my parents are getting older. My dad, thankfully is in remission from breast cancer. And so that was a discussion that we had that like, eventually, like I'm going to have to take care of my parents and they are in Dallas, Texas. So like, what does that mean when his mom is here in Vegas? So we've had to have some hard discussions on like, if something happened, like when my dad was going through cancer treatments, it was like, we had to have a discussion at one point of like, am I going to have to take the twins and go to Texas for a little while he stays here with his mom and we do elder care separately? Like even that blows, like, even talking about that blew my mind that like, we might have to do this to take care of the elders in our life. Like what, you know what I mean? Like we might have to be in two different states to do this. And it's eventually it's going to happen. We know that, we've talked about it. We have a plan, but the fact that we have to have that plan is like, wow, it's real.
Yeah. And I mean, it's what a added level of stress and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. When, you know, I think about my family is all living back in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And when something happens, it is like, I'm ready. I mean, partially this is my personality, but the other part of it is like, I'm far away. Like, how can I get there? And I'm like, I get a phone call and I'm like ready to jump on a plane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's me in a situation where my husband's here, his parents are here, our dogs are here, and his daughters are, you know, they live primarily with their mom and they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. So there's more flexibility there. And there's still that level of stress, like, oh gosh,
yeah,
I got a text from my brother during yoga. I'm like, oh gosh,
yeah,
do I need to get on a flight to Omaha? And, you know, knowing,
yeah,
this is something we're planning for.
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's coming. And even like the resources that are available. I know, I truly believe in all the resources that have been put into like mental health. And this feeds directly into that, the services that employers are putting together. But there's something to be said for the lack of support for elder care outside of the employee assistance program, because we all know nobody's using that. Okay. So like, what is there? Like there's a market there, like, you know, that there needs to be some time and effort and all that put into, because I did once work for an organization that did have like a resource line that you could call and they would help you with elder care. And my husband has told me when this first happened with his mom, he did call like an employee resource group and they helped him like get her set up and evaluated and all that stuff. But I don't think that those are like advertised or talked about because most people don't quote unquote need them, but a lot of people do. You just don't know it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think it gets complicated when it comes to elder care and what you're willing to share, what the person you're caring for is willing to share. Just thinking of my own parents, I'm like, oh my goodness, like navigating their wants, needs, desires on top of my own wants, needs, desires, and there being a caregiving situation, like that's a lot. Yeah. That is huge.
Yeah. And I think people need to plan for it. That would be my biggest thing is that like, I don't even think this is something that would have been in my purview. It would never have come up in my mind unless I was in the situation with my mother-in-law. So then it's made me look at my own parents and like what's going to happen. And so even the fact that we have a plan, I'm like, I feel my anxiety is less because I'm like, okay, we have a plan. This is what we would do. This is how we would take care of it. But a lot of people don't plan for that because it's like, you know, nobody wants to think about it, but it's coming. And it's like, we have, a lot of us have so many, like the older generation, like baby boomers are getting older. Somebody has to care for them. And their generation is much bigger than the generation that's coming after them.
Absolutely. 100%, which we know because we're seeing the impacts of baby boomers exiting the workforce in our current workforce. That group of people is retiring, may need caregiving, may need a whole host of other things. Yeah. On top of that, folks are living longer, different sets of expectations. And oh, by the way, folks who maybe would have been open to living in an assisted living facility or a care home, or, you know, their loved ones would have been okay with it, they might not be okay with it anymore.
Yeah.
After the pandemic.
Changed a lot of things. Yeah. That changed a lot of perceptions of what that would look like. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Because I mean, not only was there, you know, obviously illness spreading in very vulnerable populations very quickly, there was also the element of isolation.
Yes.
That was, you know, at least as devastating. Mm-hmm. You know, I shared one of my very first podcasts was with a good friend of mine who is an infectious disease nurse practitioner who worked during the pandemic, of course. And the most moving part of her story was talking about how her grandfather had a stroke right as the pandemic was beginning, and the choice they made to have him do home care and to care for him at home because of the realities of an assisted facility, a nursing facility, and what it would mean related to the virus, the spread of the virus. And I mean, it was, I was expecting to have a conversation about a friend who was on the front lines of the pandemic, and I did, but it really was focused around her family, her relationships, and caregiving.
Yeah.
Again, like getting back to that, how does this work? How do we navigate this? And so few resources available.
Yeah, the resources, that's the one thing that I think when we talk about the future of work and AI and technology, all these things are coming, but also this is coming too. And how can we use those same technologies to like get people ready and get them set up? And like, what does that, you know, even when I think about like leave of absence and like, you know, bereavement leave and all these things, how are they actually going to be utilized? And like, what does that look like?
I love a magic wand moment. I love a, you've got a magic wand. Make anything happen. What would resources look like ideally for you, for caregivers, whether it is, you know, caregivers of adults, caregivers of, you know, children, caregivers of any age that maybe have special needs? What do those resources look like?
You know what? The first thing that I say, and I think this is from, I'd say, I was going to say my time in, but I'm still in AA. So my time in like a sense of community. Yeah. And that would be the first thing that I would say is a sense of community. I think my husband said he knows two people that he like talks to, two other like guys that are doing elder care, in the sense of community he feels just having conversations with him, because most people don't understand what he's going through. And so I would say, even if my magic wand just started there, a sense of community for new parents, a sense of community for people that are new doing elder care, like whatever that might mean, and you know, the mental health that that comes with having a sense of community, that you're not alone, because that feeling of loneliness leads to hopelessness.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that sense of community is so foundational when we think about trauma informing anything, trauma informing work, trauma informing caregiving, that, you know, peer support community, having someone who's gone through what you've gone through, who knows what you're dealing with, and you can kind of work together, co-regulate, have a relationship, is so pivotal.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, like, you're saying that, I'm like, let's throw together a Slack group. Like, this shouldn't be that hard to create a community around caregiving.
Yeah.
And I think about, you know, larger organizations that have ERGs. It shouldn't be that hard then to incorporate an ERG, a community, a resource group around caregiving.
Community around it is so pivotal. I will say, when I was pregnant, one of the things that got me through, and my friends would laugh at me when I was saying, I'm going to hire a mama coach. And I did. I found someone through a service that was offered by my previous employer. And she was a mom of four. And I could tell her how I was feeling, what was going on, how I was scared, like all these things, just tell her the truth. And she had four babies. She knew what I was going through. So even just that ability to talk to someone just opened up so much. And so I think the flip side of that, like if I could talk to someone that has a mother-in-law that has Alzheimer's, you know, like the sense of community that I would feel. So that's what my wand would do. Just create communities for people.
I love that. I it's so powerful. And I mean, just today I was reading an article about the loneliness of American workers. Last year, the hot topic from the U.S. Surgeon General was the epidemic of loneliness.
I remember that.
connection mm-hmm. is so important. And we increasingly, you know, a lot of people point to, you know, a more virtual world as a source of loneliness. And sure, there's components of that that contribute to it. But I also think there is this continual pileup of all of these responsibilities, all these things we have to do, caregiving, kind of that sandwich generation. It's like, I don't have time mm-hmm. to create connection. How can I create connection? The systems that used to be in place mm-hmm. in society for connection don't exist in the same way anymore.
The thread isn't there anymore. So you have to actively search it out. Like, for example, one of the things that I did, my twins were in the NICU for a while. And like, so one of the things that kept me sane was that the NICU parents had a like meetup and like mm-hmm. literally would just sit and talk and cry about our babies being in the NICU and what procedure they were going to have and all of that. So even so, I will say from my work through addiction and like getting sober, that was the first time that I was like, I need a community of people to surround me and support me. And then that has led me to think about every step that I've taken since then. The first thing I do is try to find community. So literally the moment I realized that my babies were going to be in the NICU, I was Googling, who can I talk to about this? So like every single time you need someone to talk to.
There's so much power in community. There's so much power in that. And I think, I mean, you know, you sharing, you know, your sobriety, your recovery, being part of AA, trauma-informed care came out of a desire to support individuals who were in recovery from substance abuse. That is the catalyst of what we talk about when we talk about trauma-informing anything. Mm-hmm. The root is trauma-informed care, which is created by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And when you look at the original work around it, you look at the original paper, I'm nerding out over here. It does. It talks about there is something different talking to a peer, talking to someone who's, you know, walked in your shoes almost versus talking to a doctor, a therapist, a HR person, a manager, really talking to someone who understands what you're going through. Mm-hmm. What I love personally about a more virtual world and more online communities is HR for me in my career was pretty darn lonely. You know, when I worked in really large, when I worked in really large organizations, it was a little less lonely sometimes. Mm-hmm. When I worked in startups, for sure, it was incredibly lonely. It was incredibly, it was harmful. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially, I would say, especially during the pandemic, the level of loneliness there was protracted. Finding communities, you know, whether they're in person or online, has been really helpful. In just that small way, you know, how can we amplify that and pull that across for so many more people to feel supported?
Yeah, 100%. That's the key.
So you mentioned your husband and the differing expectations of a mom versus a dad. Or a daughter-in-law or daughter and a son and caregiving. I am so excited to talk about that because this is something that I have seen show up every single place I've worked. Is the different expectations and just even the discourse around, you know, moms versus dads, parental leave, caregiving, support. And I would love to hear your thoughts around that and your experience around that.
So I will start by saying that my husband is so open-minded and like all for it. So for example, when we had our twins, like I said, they were in the NICU for a while. The thought that he was going to like, they get out of the NICU and go immediately back to work would have sent me over the edge. So there was no way, like it was not going to happen. I was like, I don't care if you quit that job. I don't care what you do, that you will not go back to work in like 2 to 3 weeks. You're not going to leave me here. Like the amount of fear that I felt to like be alone with these like 4-pound preemie twins and it was just over my head. And so he actually was off for 6 weeks. And even that, and I say 6 weeks thinking like, that's not enough time. Okay. For him, for me, for our babies, like it was not enough time. And even that, people were like, why do you need to be off for 6 weeks? Like this, people said this to him. Why do you need to be off for 6 weeks? And when I tell you the rage and the amount of buildings that I wanted to burn down, because like, what the hell are you talking about? That's 6 weeks is nothing. That is nothing. That is barely me being able to function still. And he's going back to work. And so thank God I had my mom fly in from Texas. Like literally we did like a shift change type of situation where like she flew in the day before he was going back to work. So I had support and she stayed with us for several weeks. Thank goodness. But the double standard is, it really sickens me. It really, really, truly sickens me that most guys, and I've seen this also from my last HR job, they were taking 2 weeks max.
Yes.
2 weeks. And then they'd be back at work. And I'm like, what? You know, like it's, I think it's shameful. I really, really think the fact that men are not expected to not take the leave. And when they do, they're asked these like very pointed, passive aggressive comments on like, well, what were you doing? And like, why did you need 6 weeks off? Or, you know, it's stupid.
It infuriates me. Yeah. I have heard the, why does he need to take more than 2 weeks off? Mm-hmm. Every place I've worked, yeah. Every place I've worked. And really like one, I will never forget this moment in my career. I thought I was working with a very open-minded, progressive leader. And we were talking about planning for, we had a lot of leaves coming up and key roles. And I was like, let's plan for this. And I was like, these individuals can take up to 12 weeks of leave. Like, let's plan for this. And he said, if this person is going to take 12 weeks of leave, they should be prepared for that to have impacts on their career progression. And I was like,
so sad. Ugh. And that, you know what?
People, so what about women? First of all, like, what about women then?
Yes. And this is exactly why people feel that way. And they're scared. Yes.
So this is what always gets me is what it is saying is obviously there is a penalty for anyone who takes
the penalty. Yep.
Their full 12 weeks, which is again, nothing, 12 weeks of leave. Because we make fun of, disparage, discredit, punish men for taking more than a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, I, my classic line when someone would say anything to me is like, don't ever tell anyone
again. Yeah. Don't say that out loud again.
That, the fact that so many people were willing to tell their HR professional that out loud. It's like, you're thinking it then. That's like, why is that? Why is someone wanting to take care of their child, of their family, a negative to you?
Yeah.
It's really bananas to me. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And I also, just from being so close to it, it feels like they're also not giving into a counter the birthing parents situation either. Like we live in a house that had stairs. I needed help walking up the stairs. So when my husband had to go back to work, literally my mom would have to help me go up and down the stairs because I could not do it by myself. So people just miss the whole like, well, you know, the woman can just feed the baby. It's like, but there's so much more to the story. What the hell are you talking about?
And I mean, my brother and his wife have a 2-year-old and a now almost 6-month-old. I don't know how they do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when they're both there. And, you know, my brother had 5 days of leave that he was able to take. So he barely had anything. And, you know, of course, we're very lucky to have family support and all those things. But I'm like, how do you do anything? I made a joke about taking my 2 dogs to the vet to my sister-in-law. I was like, I just took 2 dogs, one of which is 9 pounds, to the vet. And it was the most chaos I've ever experienced in my life. Like, how do you go anywhere with your 2 kids? And she's like, I don't, Stephanie. Yeah. The key is I do not go anywhere. But it's like, it's so challenging. Yeah. And I'm like, why wouldn't we want people's experience to be more positive? And why wouldn't we want our employees to have more fulfilled lives, better everything.
Yeah. But the one point I think I always think about with this is because I've worked for companies that were international. It was just the Americans that had to be back. Okay. If you were anywhere else in the world, oh, you better go be with your baby. Like, what do you mean? But if you're American, you better get your ass back up here. So think about that. It's really just here. Canada, I have coworkers in Canada. They take their whole year off with no shame, honey. What's going on? Why is it? Why?
And, you know, I frequently, because I talk about trauma, talk about adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. Every time I talk about ACEs with someone who has children, like the immediate reaction is like, oh my gosh, oh, like, what about my kids? I want to protect them from this. And I always want to shift the conversation and say, you know, yes, of course you want to protect your child from harm. But when we look at adverse childhood experiences, let's shift the blame. I mean, obviously there are situations, clearly there's, you know, mistreatment by a parent, but most of the time it's a lack of support, a lack of systems and structures that actually support people in our society having children and supporting productive childhoods. Unless you're coming from a place of extreme privilege.
Yeah. And you know what? That's one thing I want to acknowledge. And I always talk about this is that, like, I am absolutely coming at this from privilege. Like, and I know that, like, my daughters are here with me. I have a full-time nanny. They're in the same house with me. When I'm not in meetings, I literally go up and love on them and, like, play with them. And I know that that is not everyone's story. So I always, part of this is me advocating for, like, I was put in childcare at probably like 6 weeks old because my mom worked in literally a chicken plant and like had to go like work on an assembly line. Like that was my childhood. And so now like a generation later, like my girls are in the house with me and all these different things. So it's just, I always want to acknowledge that because I never want people to feel like, oh my God, like who does she think she is? And I'm like, no, I get that this privilege, but I also want to advocate for people that don't have what I have, because I know, like, I have one of my best friends had a baby and went back to work in 3 weeks because she could not afford to not work. And as a mom now, it literally chokes me up. Yeah. Three weeks, she was back at work.
And that's the thing. I think that is the important point is, sometimes it can feel trivial or, you know, silly, or we can feel like, oh, I'm complaining and I have it so much better than everyone else. I think it's so important because if we're operating from a place of privilege, if we're operating from a space where, you know, you have support, you have family, you have a nanny, you have resources to make it a little more doable and it's still hard.
Yeah.
What are we asking of the majority of people? Mm-hmm. It's we continually put people in these impossible situations and then wonder why, oh, you know, absenteeism is so high or our turnover is so high or people, you know, just aren't engaged and working so hard. It's like, well, yes.
Yeah.
When we're not supporting the basic needs of our employees and the people they care about.
Yeah.
What possibly can we expect?
What do you expect? And so the fact that this country doesn't even have like a mandatory paid leave for parents is shameful. It is absolutely shameful.
It is. And I have never taken parental leave. I'm not going to. I, you know, have fabulous stepdaughters who I adore, and I have two. Well, I have two dogs. One is very naughty and one's all right most of the time. But I'm not planning on taking parental leave. That's not part of my journey. I still think it is so important for me to be a vocal supporter of this because it makes work better for everyone.
Yes.
Not just parents, not just caregivers. It makes work better for everyone and it makes our society better for everyone.
Yes. It is something that like pouring into this, like any type of leave and caregiving feeds into people staying in roles longer, people that traditionally are not in leadership roles, being able to move into leadership roles. That was something that even at my level, so I'll say this, when I went out on maternity leave, I was at a senior vice president level. I did not know any other senior vice presidents that were going out on maternity leave. So even that was tricky because I was like, I have an entire team under me. And like, I'm going to go out on leave. Somebody's going to have to step up. And then what's going to happen when I come back? Are they going to think I'm not as committed? Like, these are conversations that I had, and I had an amazing leader that like supported me, but also like that was something that was going through my head. So it's something that, you know, I coach people on all the time, but when I had to do it for myself, it felt totally different.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I can. Yes. Same. I feel you. I'm like, here's what I would do, but then I have to do it myself. Oh, wow. Okay.
I was like, step-by-step guide. But then when I had to do it, I was like,
So I mean, thinking of that, you know, thinking of, you know, folks that you coach, folks that you support through these experiences, you know, what advice do you have for people who are taking parental leave, people who are caregiving, folks who, you know, think becoming a parent might be in their future and they want to plan for that as they plan their career?
Yeah. My biggest thing that I would say is that I used every resource that was available to me. So at the company that I was at, they, like I said, they paid for me to have this coach. I reached out to our insurance plan because there is so many things that like people just never know about. They never tap into. So I like called our insurance and said like, hey, I'm pregnant. Like what do you guys offer? That was what I said. And they're like, oh, we'll send you like a free pump. We'll send, like, they literally sent me like a welcome package that I would have never received. Didn't even know that was a thing from the insurance company. So even that is an example of me just being like, I'm calling everybody. I want everybody to know I'm pregnant and I want everything that is afforded to me.
So, I love that.
So get everything, every resource that is available to you. That would be one. And then the second one I'd say is prioritize your mental health, because you're going to have to go out on leave. And so working yourself into that last day, for example, my situation, I had my twins at 35 weeks. I was 5 weeks early. I was not even meant to be going out, but everything was ready. So having everything ready weeks, months in advance, because you just never know what's going to happen, would be my strong recommendation. And also make sure that you and your leader are like putting something together for like who owns what, and know that some stuff can just wait. That was important to my team. Some stuff does not have to be done while you're on leave. Some stuff can fall and it's fine. It's fine.
It's okay. I think that's so interesting, is whether it's a leave conversation or it is a, you know, vacant roles, a layoff, what, it's always like, oh my gosh, how are we going to possibly cope? Mm-hmm. Well, the obvious answer is like, what can we not do?
Yes.
Like, what can we stop? Yes. Obviously, like, we just have to stop doing some things. We have to deprioritize things, and getting comfortable with that is just so important.
Yeah. That was hard for some people, but that was one of the first things I wrote out, is what can we hold on? What are we just going to pause for 4 months?
Yeah.
And we had a list of things, because I took 4.5 months off. Like, what are we just going to pause? The person that was going to step up and this is going to be her stretch assignment, I was like, my expectation is not that you're going to do this job, because there is no way that you're going to have all of my responsibilities and then all the responsibilities that you still have. So we prioritized and we stuck to it. That was something also that I had, the person that was going to step up, my leader and the CEO, we all sat down and talked about what is it she's going to do and what is she not going to do? Because I didn't want her to get in a situation where she was like, did you promise that I was going to do this? And I didn't know. So no. Everybody that's going to be involved, get in a room. Yeah.
Yes. And that's so important, that clarity, that transparency, because I have seen it not that done that way. And it's almost like this, oh, here, let's put these people on the team, almost pit them against each other and use this as a way to like see who steps up. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Nobody wants that.
No one wants that. It just creates.
No.
I have said this so many times since I have stopped working in a corporate environment and have become an entrepreneur, like, you know, fending for myself, basically. It has been so much less competitive than any time I've ever worked in corporate America. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that about?
Yeah.
So bizarre. Well, we'll have to have another podcast episode. I would love that. Because it is just like, I was thinking like, ooh, we're getting real. Like, this is like big Hunger Games, Stephanie, work addition, becoming independent. And instead it was like, how can I help you? How can I support you? Let me lift you up. And I'm like, this is amazing. Why haven't I been doing this my whole career? And then I look back on my own experience and I'm like, oh, that's
why. Yeah. Because it's because leadership is a lot of times make you feel that you have to do those things and knock other people down. And it's a hard thing, but it comes up a lot with leave and like, who's going to step up. And so it was very clear who was doing what. And also we broke my role up into three different people. So three different people cover certain things. So if you're going out on leave, know that one person doesn't have to take everything. Some stuff can just fall down and come back when you get there. And then, you know, be honest with everybody about who's doing what.
Well, I mean, we've talked a lot. I loved it. I'm going to have you back on the podcast again sometime. Yeah. You've got so much amazing knowledge to share. I would love to make sure, though, you are doing some amazing work, and I want to make sure you have a chance to share what you're doing and where our listeners can find you so they can check out some of that amazing work.
I would love that. So first of all, LinkedIn, I literally post every day because I have a lot on my mind. So LinkedIn, Jessica D. Winder. You could also go to my website, which is Hidden Gem Career Coaching. And then I also have a book, The Hidden Gem Within, which is a career journal that, you know, will give you ideas on what do you want to do to move forward, being very future focused. And then there's some stories in there about my own lived experience. Mm-hmm. And then I also just created a course for interview prep. So if you have an interview coming up or you've been recently laid off, it is very much, it's just documents. There's no videos. It's literally just documents to prep you with activities to get ready for an interview. And there's some bonus content on like salary negotiations and all of that stuff in there too. So it's meant to be at your own pace, work through it and get you ready for an interview.
It's amazing. And I am a huge fan of the Hidden Gem Within journal. It is fantastic. Interview course is also fantastic. I am thrilled because I so often get questions, how can I get better at interviewing Stephanie? And now I can be like, right here.
Yeah.
And bonus, I know there's a lot of new grads out there. If you are looking for a gift for a new grad that is unique, I highly recommend the journal or the interview prep. Such a thoughtful, such a useful gift. And definitely well worth it. Something they're going to leverage. I've given the interview class as a gift. It is an awesome one. So definitely make sure and check it out. And like I said, if you didn't already pause the podcast to go follow Jessica on LinkedIn, make sure and do that now.
I would love that. One lovely story to tie this whole caregiving thing together is my mother-in-law's name is Gina. And so every time I go talk to Gina, I always ask her questions about Aaron, my husband. And he is actually the only person that she still remembers. And if you ask her any question about him, she can answer it. So she has given me so much advice about my twins and like when she was little with Aaron, what she would do and like diaper rashes and all of that. And so it gets me choked up. But her memory for her son is so deep and so passionate in that, like, no matter what, she has forgotten everything. She sometimes can't even tell you her name, but you ask her about her son and she knows him. And it's so, so deep. And I say that to say that caregiving is such a big deal. So I'll end with that.
Oh, thank you. That was beautiful. You got me all choked up now too.
I'm like, no matter what happens, she knows who her son is. So it's a beautiful thing to see.
That's incredible. What an incredible experience. Like you said, what an honor, what a gift.
Yeah.
Oh, Jessica, thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us. And everyone, thank you so much for joining us and listening. Until next time, be well.